Deuteronomy 22. And in the English, it says various laws. Delitzsch has another comment. This is for caring for your neighbor, the pattern of life in a civil society, etc. So we begin. You shall not see your brother's ox or his sheep going astray and ignore them. You shall take them back to your brother. Okay. So caring for your neighbor and caring for his property. Verse 2.
And if he does not live near you and you do not know who he is, you shall bring it home to your house and it shall stay with you until your brother seeks it. Then you shall restore it to him.
Yeah, that's very responsible, isn't it? You'd love to live in a community that was that way. Verse 3. And you shall do the same with his donkey or with his garment or with any lost thing of your brother's, which he loses and you find, you may not ignore it. Verse 4.
You shall not see your brother's donkey or his ox fall down along the road and hide yourself from them. You shall surely help him lift them up again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Delitzsch comments that in the Hebrew, this is not only your brother, it's a fallen animal belonging to another, in this case, an enemy. Sorry. That's a reference back to when this law was first given in Exodus 23, verse 5, which is a it's a thing to look back to. If you see the donkey of one who hates you lying down under its burden, you shall refrain from leaving him with it. You shall rescue it with him. So okay, moving on. Verse 5. A woman shall not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on a woman's cloak, for whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. So as Delitzsch introduced the details of this chapter, it is the civil society in the proper order, caring for your neighbor's possessions and property, but also the civil society in the proper order as God ordered it. And that starts working not only in this verse, but throughout a large part of the chapter into the genders and sexual relationships. Verse 6, I'm not sure exactly what to make of it, but somebody read it.
If you come across a bird's nest beside the road, either in a tree or on the ground, and the mother is sitting on the young or on the eggs, do not take the mother with the young.
What?
I don't think, well, there's breakfast and dinner done. Let's just take them
home. You shall let the mother go, but the young you may take for yourself, that it may go well with you and that you may live long. And Delitzsch doesn't give any help on this.
Well, like taking eggs from a chicken here.
It, the study Bible says legislation unique to Deuteronomy protects the potential future food source rather than allowing an immediate short-term gain.
Makes sense.
Well, that puts it into the practical.
Yeah. Well, you got chickens, you know, you can harvest, you can
get the eggs from the chickens,
but you don't want to kill the hen or she'll
no more eggs
and stops laying, right?
But some of these things you gotta say, okay, I gotta listen for a further clue sometime in the future. Verse 8.
Kathy, you should read that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I had to unmute myself. When you build a new house, you shall make, a parapet?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For your roof, that you may not bring the guilt of blood upon your house if anyone should fall from it. I don't know what a parapet is.
It's a walkway. Like a
little fenced thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the roofs of the Israelite houses were flat, as they mostly are in the east, so that the inhabitants often lived upon them. And so
they were used for drying and storing produce, socializing and sleeping in the warm weather.
Yeah.
So a parapet would be a low restraining wall or a railing around the edge of the roof.
I think they depict those in the Chosen, like when they lowered the guy down to Jesus from the roof. So that makes sense.
But why is it, don't make a parapet that you may not bring the guilt of blood upon your house if anyone should fall from it?
Do make a parapet. And you shall make a parapet for your roof.
Oh, you shall make a parapet.
Yeah, you don't want
to. So they're sleeping out there, they don't fall off. Okay.
That'd be a bad fall out of bed.
Yeah. Got it.
Sometimes a pastor needs teaching.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
And then in verse 9, it returns to not mixing things, because when God created the world, he created things according to their kinds, and yada, 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 respect the craftsmanship of the designer. But you shall not sow your vineyard with two kinds of seeds, lest the whole yield be forfeited. The crop that you have sown and the yield of the vineyard. Okay, verse 10.
You shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together.
And 11, you shall not wear cloth of wool and linen mixed together. And 12.
You shall not make tassels on the four corners of the cloak. Oh, I'm sorry, you shall make tassels on the four corners of the clothing with which you cover yourself.
Okay, so the point in those things is that Israel was to be the beginning of God restoring all things. And Dalich says, the covenant in its infancy had such and such regulations. And as things went along, things developed further, and there were changes introduced, including in the New Testament, the vision that Peter had, not to call anything unclean that God has called clean. But this is in its infancy, and this is, you know, when you plant something, you're very, very careful of it. And Dalich would go that route and say, God is being really, really careful about getting things started in a certain way. And now we go back to talking about that thing called sex.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
13. If any man takes a wife and goes into her and then hates her, well, that does happen, doesn't it? 14.
and slanders her and gives her a bad name, saying, I married this woman, but when I approached her, I did not find proof of her virginity.
Mm-hmm. Then the father of the young woman and her mother shall take and bring out the evidence of her virginity to the elders of the city in the gate. What is that?
Well, that's going to be kind of hard after he's already.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
This is still done in certain parts of the world. On the wedding night, the sheets with the blood of the breaking of the hymen would be reserved. And in this case, it would be given to the parents of the bride to keep as a guarantee that if there should be any accusation, they have proof.
Yeah, but what if the guy, you know, conveniently lost them after that wedding night?
No. If he in the morning suddenly is up and disposing of the sheets,
and there's no blood,
then it's an admission that he's hiding something. And if your judge sitting in the gate and the charge is brought and then the counter charge, well, he burned the sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're one of the elders in the gate. I've seen instances where the elders take a look at the guy and say, you're a jerk. But this was to protect her reputation, just in case. Shall we go on? 16.
And the father of the young woman shall say to the elders, I gave my daughter to this man to marry, and he hates her.
Okay. And behold, he has accused her of misconduct, saying, I did not find in your daughter evidence of virginity. And yet this is the evidence of my daughter's virginity. And they shall spread the cloak or sheets before the elders of the city.
Oh, humiliating.
Then what happens?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, then what happens? Verse 18.
And the elders of that city shall take that man and punish him.
Anybody have a different word for that?
Whip.
Whip. So the elders take the guy and they whip him.
Oh.
And they shall fine him 100 shekels of silver and give them to the father of the young woman because he has brought a bad name upon a virgin of Israel. And she shall be his wife. He may not divorce her all his days.
Why would she want to stay with him?
Really bad, and she moves out and moves back in with her parents. Can he remarry? No, he cannot.
Well, outward closed doors. His wife, yeah.
There's more than just one angle where, you know, he's going to lose out if he brings a false charge. Okay. And then we have a but. Verse 20.
But if the thing is true, the evidence of virginity was not found in the young woman.
Mm-hmm. And realize that when they say that, that's just the beginning of evidence. Things would be looked into and such and such.
Things looked into, witnesses spoken to, all that stuff.
Yeah. There are circumstances where an accident could have happened and she doesn't have her hymen intact, but
oh yeah, that hymen can be broken in various ways.
Yep.
You know, riding camels and tending the flocks and running around, even, you know, it doing her chores.
Yep.
I would hope they would go into it a lot further before they stone her to death.
Well, yeah. Yeah. That's why I said verse 20 is just the beginning of the evidentiary. But verse 21, if so, then they shall bring out the young woman to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her to death with stones, because she has done an outrageous thing in Israel by what? Whoring in her father's house. So you shall purge the evil from your midst.
And so the men that she was promiscuous with get to stone her.
Probably.
Yeah. Good point, Terry.
I know. I'm on my soapbox.
All right. Yeah.
Takes two.
But verse 22.
If a man is found sleeping with another man's wife, both the man who slept with her and the woman must die. You must purge the evil from Israel.
Okay. What about betrothal? Because betrothal is the pledges made before the coming together, which is they're married by virtue of the vows. So what then? If there is a betrothed virgin and a man meets her in the city and lies with her, 24.
First stake.
Then you shall bring them both out to the gate of that city, and you shall stone them to death with stones. The young woman, because she did not cry out in the city, and the man, because he humbled his neighbor's wife, so you shall put away the evil from among you.
Now, a point to make here, he violated his neighbor's wife. So a betrothed before getting married is understood to be a wife. So Mary was betrothed to Joseph. When she became pregnant, was she married?
Well, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's not engaged.
But they didn't stone her to death.
No.
Thank goodness.
Joseph considered putting her away quietly, because he didn't want to bring her to shame, which would have been this. And then there was a dream that what was conceived in her is from God, and he should take her home as his wife. Verse 25. But if in the open country a man meets a young woman who is betrothed, and the man seizes her and lies with her, then only the man who lay with her shall die.
So that's rape, basically?
Rape. My Bible says rape. Yep.
There's an assumption here, but let's read the next verse here.
But you shall do nothing to the young woman. She has committed no offense punishable by death. For this case is like that of a man attacking and murdering his neighbor.
Because he met her in the open country, and though the betrothed young woman cried for help, there was no one to rescue her. So the assumption is, if it's in the city and she's unwilling and it's rape, she would have cried for help. And the cities were not as noisy as they are in our day. And the cities were much smaller than they are in our day. So it's actually halfway a reasonable assumption.
Well, the assumption
in the country.
The assumption in the one is the woman was a willing partner, and in the other, she was not.
Yep.
And I think if you found in the city that he grabbed her and gagged her and then took her out, that they would have found for the young woman too, and he would have been stoned, but not her.
Yeah.
So the idea is one is willing, one is not, but it's told in pictures or in stories rather than.
Yeah. And the danger is to assume that all of these things are absolutes and there is no further thinking about it. And that just is not the way that it was with the judges and with the rabbis. They would go into great detail about the different circumstances. So don't make the assumption that there's nothing further to be said on each of these. But let's go on. 28.
If a man meets a virgin who is not betrothed, seizes her, and lies with her, they are bound.
Oh, what then? She's not betrothed, so she is not married. Then the man who lay with her shall give to the father of the young woman 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife. Because he has violated her, he may not divorce her all his days. Add on what I said earlier, and if it goes badly and she moves out of that house because he's a creep and moves back in with her parents, he still can't get married to another. And there's an added note from Delitzsch. Exodus 22, 16 and 17. And if the father refuses to give her to the man as his wife, he still has to pay the price.
It's the bride price, right?
Yeah. And a final verse, 30.
A man shall not take his father's wife so that he does not uncover his father's nakedness.
Yep. And footnote, Hebrew says uncover his father's skirt.
Well, the two shall become one.
Wasn't that back in the 30s and 20s slang for a woman? A skirt? Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't think that's what the Hebrew is doing. we go on to chapter 23 and exclusions from the assembly. Those who are included, other things that we'll enter in later. And a surprising verse. So 23 verse 1. No one whose testicles are crushed or whose male organ is cut off shall enter the assembly of the Lord. And the assembly is the worshiping assembly, and somebody who's damaged in that way was understood to be an outsider. There is a later modification of that. But the concern is mutilation of the nature of man as created by God. This law was one of the ordinances intended for the period of infancy and has lost its significance with the spread of the kingdom of God over all the nations of the earth. Delitzsch gives a reference to Isaiah 56, verses 4 and 5. Which actually is an important reference to understand. So Isaiah 56, verses 4 and 5. I'll read 4. For thus says the Lord, to the eunuchs who keep my Sabbaths, who choose the things that please me and hold fast my covenant, what is it for them?
To them I will give within my temple and its walls a memorial and a name better than sons and daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that will not be cut off.
Okay. So that is the later modification for the sake of grace. Back to Deuteronomy. Verse 2 of chapter 23.
No one born of forbidden marriage, nor any of his descendants, may enter the assembly of the Lord, even down to the 10th generation.
Okay. And 10th is the number of completions, so it seems to mean permanently. And there's a parallel phrase in verse 3 that gives an indication that it is permanent. No Ammonite or Moabite may enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the 10th generation. None of them may enter the assembly of the Lord forever. The Ammonites and the Moabites, well, where did they come from? Lot's daughters. How'd that happen? They said, look, our father's name is going to be cut off and fail. We have to do something about it. So they got him drunk and had babies. This is a matter of incest. The forbidden unions. And then there's a second reason why Ammonites and Moabites are on the outs. Verse 4.
Because they did not meet you with bread and water on the road when they came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam, the son of Beor from Pethor of Mesopotamia, to curse you.
Oh, well done. But the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam. Instead, the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing for you because the Lord your God loved you. But still, verse 6.
Shall not seek for peace or your prosperity all your days for
them. Okay. So those were the two nations that sought to destroy Israel when they were coming into the promised land. They were kin of a sort, but turned against God's people. On the other hand, verse 7, you shall not abhor an Edomite, for he is your brother. You shall not abhor an Egyptian, because you were a sojourner in his land. Verse 8.
children born to them in the third generation may enter the assembly of the Lord.
Okay. And then enter the assembly of the Lord with that phrasing gets a somewhat clearer definition. They could become part of Israel. And that would be proselyte and circumcision and affirming the covenant and all of the things where they were after they became part of Israel. It is like when somebody from another country becomes a naturalized citizen, they are Americans in our country. And we see them as Americans. So
basically Ammonites and Moabites could never become Israelites.
Yep.
So what was Rahab?
She was one who renounced everything to claim God.
Okay.
And she was an exception.
So if you renounce your heritage and you claim God, then you wind up in the lineage of Jesus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There were exceptions to all of these things.
Jesus loves to break the rules.
Yes,
he does. Okay, moving on, verse 9. When you are encamped against your enemies, then you shall keep yourself from every evil thing. Yeah, we go into uncomfortable stuff in the next verse.
If any among you become unclean because of a nocturnal emission, then he shall go outside the camp. He shall not come inside the camp.
But when evening comes, he shall bathe himself in water, and as the sun sets, he may come inside the camp. And I find the next one, the next concern, somewhat fascinating, interesting. Verse 12.
Oh, Lord. You shall have a place outside the camp and you shall go out to it.
To?
What are they talking about?
My version says to relieve yourself.
And you shall have a trowel with your tools. And when you sit down outside, you shall dig a hole with it and turn back and cover up your excrement.
Oh, wow.
I'll take a toilet, thank you.
This is while they were traveling, right?
Verse 14.
I wouldn't have survived.
Me neither. I would die.
Think of all
because the Lord your God walks in the midst of your camp to deliver you and to give up your enemies before you. Therefore, your camp must be holy so that he may not see anything indecent among you and turn away from you. So
they had to be told to do this. They had no common sense. I mean, really.
Well, think about human nature anyway, right?
Well, I wouldn't drop trow in the middle of everybody and do my business.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Is this one of those laws that when you read the law, you wonder why the law had to be made?
Yes.
Okay. Verse 15 is absolutely fascinating. You shall not give up to his what happened there?
I will answer this. And
we still see you.
Good morning. My phone rang, guys. Sorry. Hi.
She's Jill. Got her phone linked to the computer.
Oh.
She did.
Okay, verse 15. You shall not give up to his master a slave who has escaped from his master to you. Well, 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 well. Somebody say abolition movement?
Yeah.
there are more specifics. Verse 16.
Let him live among you wherever he likes and in whatever town he chooses. Do not oppress him.
Okay. And then diving into Delitzsch on this.
Show him grace like God.
A slave who had escaped from his master to Israel was not to be given up. The reference is to a slave who had fled to them from a foreign country. I'm inserting the word probably. On account of the harsh treatment which he had received from his heathen master. So Israel was to be like the north. And if you could escape to Israel, you could stay free. And I'm surprised that I have never read that verse and recognized it for what it is and for the impact it could have made in our nation's history. Hmm. But there it is. And that's why Christians would have been in the vanguard of the abolition movement. But we have to go and get uncomfortable again. Verse 17. None of the daughters of Israel shall be a cult prostitute, and none of the sons of Israel shall be a cult prostitute. Male and female prostitutes of Israelitish descent were not to be tolerated. Prostitution as an act of religious worship. The exclusion of foreign prostitutes was involved in the command to root out the Canaanites. The word for them, Kadesh and Kadeshah, were persons who prostituted themselves in the worship of the Canaanite Astarte or Ashtoreth. Okay. And then there's a reference to Genesis 38:21. Just to make this more uncomfortable. Genesis 38:21. Gee, I wonder who that would be about. Oh, Judah. Verse 20. After Judah went and turned into Tamar, his daughter-in-law, promised to send payment, sent the young goat by his friend the Adullamite to take back the pledge from the woman's hand, his staff. And he asked the men of the place, where is the cult prostitute who was at Enaim at the roadside? And they said, no cult prostitute has been here. And then 3 months later, Tamar is found to be pregnant, and they're going to bring her out and stone her. Verse 25, sent word to her father-in-law, by the man to whom these things belong, I am pregnant. And she said, please identify whose these are, the signet and the cord and the staff. They were his. And then she has twins, Perez and Zerah. So the hire of a whore is what the Kadeshah was paid for giving herself up. The price of a dog, oh, that's verse 18. Did we read verse 18? Nope. Somebody read verse 18. And that'll make you very uncomfortable.
You shall not bring the fee of a prostitute or the wages of a dog into the house of the Lord your God in payment for any vow, for both of these are an abomination to the Lord your God.
Okay. Delitzsch again. The price of a dog is not the price paid for the sale of a dog, but is a figurative expression used to denote the gains of the Kadesh, that would be the male prostitute, who was called Kivaidos by the Greeks and received his name from the dog-like manner in which the male Kadesh debased himself. See, why am I bringing this out? See Revelation 22, verse 15, where the unclean are distinctly called dogs.
So a male prostitute was a dog?
Yeah.
Instead of a, well, I guess cur.
No, a dog, because that's how they did it to the male prostitute.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like dogs.
So the word.
So in Revelation, when it brings that up, and says, outside are the dogs. Okay.
So the female prostitute is called a Kadesh?
No, Kadesha.
Kadesha. And the female, or the male prostitute is called a Kadesh?
Kadesh.
But doesn't that mean blessing?
Kadesh means holy.
Holy. Yeah, so.
One who is devoted to the cultic worship of a god.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a little bit of irony there. Sarcastically called holy. Okay, that's as uncomfortable as it gets. And now let's get away from that. You shall not charge interest on loans to your brother, interest on money, interest on food, interest on anything that is lent for interest. Verse 20.
You may charge a foreigner interest, but not a brother Israelite, so that the Lord your God may bless you in everything you put your hand to in the land you are entering to possess.
Mm-hmm. If you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay fulfilling it. For the Lord your God will surely require it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. And 22.
But if you abstain from vowing, it shall not be sin to you.
So Ananias and Sapphira, who sold the parcel of land and gave part of it to the apostles in the book of Acts, and lied about how much the land cost. They made a vow and withheld it. And Peter says, was it not yours to begin with? Was it not yours when you sold it? Was it not yours to dispose of? Why did you lie to the Holy Spirit? And then they fell over dead. 23, you shall be careful to do what has passed your lips, for you have voluntarily vowed to the Lord your God what you have promised with your mouth. Verse 24, 24 and 25 are still in effect in the New Testament. So 24.
If you go into your neighbor's vineyard, you may eat your fill of grapes, as many as you wish, but you shall not put any in your bag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doggy bags. If you go into your neighbor's standing grain, you may pluck the ears with your hand, but you shall not put a sickle to your neighbor's standing grain. And so when Jesus and the disciples were walking through the field, and the disciples were plucking heads of grain and rolling them in their hands, was perfectly legitimate to do. Pharisees had no problem with that. It was just the Sabbath day. And a note from Delitzsch, the right of hungry persons when passing through a field to pluck ears of grain and rub out the grains and eat is still recognized among the Arabs. Chapter 24 is on divorce and warnings against withholding affection or injustice. And we keep on going. When a man takes a wife and marries her, if then she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some indecency in her and writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house and she departs out of his house. This is going to get very specific. Verse 2.
And if she goes and becomes another man's wife.
Verse 3. And the latter man hates her and writes her a certificate of divorce and puts it in her hand and sends her out of his house. Or if the latter man dies who took her to be his wife, well, what then? Verse 4.
Then her former husband who sent her away may not take her again to be his wife after she has been defiled, for that is an abomination before the Lord. And you shall not bring sin upon the land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance.
And let's make it worse for the men at this point. Because he put her away, he forced her out of his house. He forced her to seek some other place where she could have a home. And then the New Testament, it's like he caused her to commit adultery. He's guilty. Now he wants her back. That's back to Deuteronomy. Now he wants her back after forcing her into that situation. No way. He's forfeited his rights. He broke the union that God formed. He doesn't have any rights here. Does that make sense? Okay. Verse 5. When a man is newly married, he shall not go out with the army or be liable for any other public duty. He shall be free at home 1 year to be happy with his wife whom he has taken. But Delitzsch has a slightly different take on it. That he may devote himself entirely to his new wife and be able to gladden his wife. Okay. So it's not for his sake. Verse 6.
No one shall take a mill or an upper millstone in pledge, for that would be taking a wife in pledge.
Because the millstone was necessary for making the food. And if you take that in pledge, then you leave the person you took it from to starve. If a man is found stealing one of his brothers of the people of Israel, If a man is found stealing one of his brothers of the people of Israel, and if he treats him as a slave or sells him, then that thief shall die. So you shall purge the evil from your midst. That's the second verse. Now, back in 23:15, a slave escapes. Keep him free. If an Israelite seizes one of his neighbors to make him a slave, then he shall die. Verse 8.
Take heed in an outbreak of leprosy that you carefully observe and do according to all that the priests, the Levites, shall teach you. Just as I commanded them, so you shall be careful to do.
Okay. Now, here's a personal insert, isn't it? Remember what the Lord your God did to Miriam on the way as you came out of Egypt. Who's Miriam?
Moses' sister.
Yeah. Yeah, remember Miriam? Remember my sister? How horrible that was?
He complained, right?
Be careful. Miriam complained about Moses taking a wife, and she and Aaron rebelled, and she got leprosy all over, and Moses had to intercede. Is a man's house his castle? Verse 10.
Mm-hmm. When you make a loan of any kind to your neighbor, do not go into his house to get what he is offering as a pledge.
Yeah. You shall stand outside, and the man to whom you make the loan shall bring the pledge out to you. Okay. Verse 12.
And if he is a poor man, you shall not sleep in his pledge.
Well, if his pledge is a coat and it's cold, what then? You shall restore to him the pledge as the sun sets, that he may sleep in his cloak and bless you, and it shall be righteousness for you before the Lord your God. Okay. 14.
You shall not oppress a hired worker who is poor and needy, whether he is one of your brothers or one of the sojourners who are in your land within your towns.
Okay. You shall give him his wages on the same day before the sun sets, for he is poor and counts on it. The literal Hebrew is, and to it he lifts up his soul. Lest he cry against you to the Lord and you be guilty of sin. And that was one of the verses where Martin Luther launched and said, you who call yourselves Christians and yet you treat the poor, even the poor who are unchristian, or the poor who are Jews, or the poor who are unbelievers, you treat them badly, they cry out and God will hear their prayer against you. And the Lord reserves the right to side with the wronged, even if the one that's doing the wrong is one of his own people. You know, he is the protector of the widow and the orphan, the fatherless and the oppressed. So Luther. 16.
Fathers shall not be put to death because of their children, nor shall children be put to death because of their fathers. Each one shall be put to death for his own sin. Well, that's good.
Well, that's not
that's a good thing, right?
That could have been phrased better. But it was a common thing among the heathen nations, Persians, Macedonians, and others, for the children and families of criminals to be also put to death.
Isn't that what the mob does?
Yeah.
Goes after your family?
Yeah. And so do the Chinese.
For crimes in which they had no share. And this is just, God says this is absolutely wrong. 17, you shall not pervert the justice due to the sojourner or to the fatherless, or take a widow's garment in pledge. And verse 18 gives a background to this.
But you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. Therefore, I command you to do this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, remember where you came from.
I have loved you.
Yeah. Yep. When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back and get it. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. There's a couple angles on that. It's called gleaning, to go through the field and take the remnants. And so many of the poor were fed and kept alive. But also, that the Lord your God may bless you. And part of the blessing is that you should be a part of, a partner with God in doing the work of God. And if you are blessed to be able to supply somebody else's needs, that's a special blessing, because that's image of God stuff. That's the work of the Lord. And for you to be invited into doing the work of the Lord is tremendously special. So, verse 20.
When you beat your olive trees, you shall not, you shall not go over them again. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow.
Okay. You know what beating the olive trees is about?
Yeah,
yeah, beat it with a big stick and it shakes off the ripe olives. But don't go back and do it again, because the remnant are for those in need. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not strip it afterward. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. And verse 22.
You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I command you to do this thing.
Okay. Which completes verse chapter 24. Next week, hope to get through 25, 26, and 27. Well, at least 25 and 26, because in starting in 27, 28, 27 and 28 are the curses and blessings, and 29 is the renewal of the covenant. So we're about to complete this section of the reciting of the details of the laws.